Hello, Instance listeners. A quick heads up that today's episode is all about the 1 year anniversary of Overwatch. We do talk about WoW at the top of the show for a bit, but today it's all about Overwatch. That's the focus. If you don't want to hear that, time to check out. If you want to hear it, sit down and enjoy because it's a good one. Next week looks like a lore show in World of Warcraft, so watch for that. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you on the other side.
I'm Jeff Kaplan, and you're listening to The Instance.
Everybody, welcome back to The Instance. This is The Instance, episode 491. I'm Scott Johnson with Patrick Beja and Dills. Hi, guys!
Hey, how's it going,
What's
Scott?
Going on? Hey, happy
Whoa,
1 year...
dual introduction.
I know,
wow.
Weird, right? I don't usually
don't
do
have
that.
Have to each come up with something to say.
usually stick you guys with like a fairly different way of opening things, but not today. Not today.
I went with weird teenage voice. Not even Patrick.
Oh, I liked it though.
I think that worked. Yeah,
yeah,
that was
I liked
cool.
It. It was fine.
Hey guys.
Hey, what's
How's
going?
It going, Dills? How's it going in Texas?
It's going great.
Yeah.
I just turned into a teenager apparently too. My voice cracked there, but it's going good. except for my dog decided to tear up an entire roll of toilet paper
that
I was using as a napkin last night.
Oh so. No! Oh no!
Don't leave a roll of toilet paper when you have a dog on your coffee table.
You know what I'm glad to hear,
Quick
though?
Quick tip for you, everybody.
I'm glad to hear that I'm not the only one that grabs a roll of toilet paper and keeps it handy for, like, napkin needs and reasons.
Well, I ran out of paper towels,
yeah.
And I was like, well, at least I didn't run out of toilet paper. Yeah.
You know,
I'm not a total
it's
failure
for,
yet.
It's for napkin needs, but we don't know. I mean, might have been that he needed the toilet paper. As
maybe,
he was
yeah, maybe he just was
he
making
has
a
long
big mess.
Streaming sessions.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
What,
yeah, I understand that. But I keep a roll
he
right over here.
He just doesn't have hands. He was trying his best to just wipe his face or something after
sure.
eating. And then, but,
yeah.
you know.
You never
he
know
has
what to
dog
expect.
Teeth and dog hands. It's not easy for him.
Dogs are weird. They beat to their own drum.
Opposable thumbs.
Exactly. Oh, man. If dogs get opposable thumbs, we're all screwed. Let's not wish for that. Particular mutation.
I don't know.
Well,
I don't
dogs
know.
Can use fidget
think,
spinners, right? Yeah. That's the only thing holding them back.
Dogs would start using fidget spinners. We would be in real trouble if cats got opposable thumbs.
Yeah.
That's when the real yeah. problem begins.
My dog's
That's true.
Terrified.
Dogs would probably fix this mess.
Yeah.
Cats would not.
No, they'll further it. But fidget spinners terrify my dog. That's I don't think they're into it. I think dogs are not going to like those. Put
really?
That one over. Yeah. If I spin this and go near her,
like
she'll
it, huh?
take off the other way. Yeah. She's kind of a puss, though, so that may explain it. She's not you're not a very tough dog. Anyway, hey, it's good to be here, everybody. We are here to celebrate the 1 year anniversary of Overwatch, Blizzard's smash hit, 40 million install base strong, or whatever the new number is. I forget now. Some huge amount of people have bought this game.
30 million, yeah. 30 million players.
30 million players, and they... keep getting better and better, it seems like. But I don't know. We probably have some things we can say about the game in the show today that'll not, I don't know, that'll be that critical. But, you know, we got some ideas. We have some things that we'd like to see, maybe. Before we get to all that, though, I got a couple of things to get out of the way. I wanted to make this more official because I haven't talked about it on the show. Those listening may remember Greg Street, an important part of Blizzard's past and certainly World of Warcraft's current state. He was known as Ghostcrawler, been on the show a couple of times. He will be at Nerdtacular, and I forgot to make that official, but it's happening. So he'll be there. If you're coming, you'll get to see him. If you're not, you can see it in the live stream. Don't know what he's going to do on stage yet. We're still working on that, but Greg Street will be there. He currently works at Riot Games, so he's a bit of a defector, but it's okay. We're letting him in. It's fine. And John LeGrave from the Diablo team, also going to be there. And, of course, Russell Brower, always there every year. No Metzen this year. He's busy with a new baby. Stuff going on. Can't be there. So if you were there in 2015, that was your one shot. But anyway, these guys are coming. I'm pretty excited about it. All right, Patrick, also before we get moving, you got your flying achievement. Well done. Way to
Thank
go.
You. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, and you're leveling alts. Like, you're all in again. Like, what
I
happened?
You got a legendary as well.
Yeah. How'd that
yes,
go for you?
I did. So I've been playing, you know, a lot of Legion, and I played before. I had not gotten the legendary, and that was like, and I contribute to the Legion construction thing with the Legion full resources. And I opened the box and, oh my God, a legendary in there. And it made me really happy. Like, It's getting a virtual item randomly in a game should not make people that happy. But I was like on Twitter, woohoo, dancing around. And so it was cool. I did get my flying achievement, as you mentioned. It was, you know, as I said last week, it was just really fun to work towards it. And now I have it, and it's making, I really like the way they implemented it for this expansion. I think it's the exact right balance, because you first experience all of the content on the ground as you should, without cheaty shortcuts. But then you don't have to wait until the very end of the expansion to start flying around and making a lot of the content a little bit more trivial, but at the same time, it's more convenient. Like, we're really midway through the expansion. And I also thought about this a little bit more when we discussed it last week. I think one of the things I'm really liking in this step, in this version of where they're going with the expansions, is that back in Mist of Pandaria or Draenor, at this point of the expansion's life cycle, we would be at the end of the storyline, the end of the expansion. It would be kind of the last patch. And it certainly feels like that, because we're getting a conclusion to the story in many, many ways. We're going to be, you know, we have killed Gul'dan, and we're going to go in the Tomb of Sargeras and stop the invasion of the Legion and all of this. And that could be itself contained thing. But with this one, we have even more to look forward to, with that extra bit where we're going to go to Argus with another raid, another set of everything. And it really feels to me like a great way of, how can I put it? Like, to the storytelling and the acts of the expansion are much more balanced in that way, because there's the epicness is continuing. It's not just, oh well, it's the end that we expected, that we always have.
I wonder if we're going to see last expansion to this expansion kind of had a cliffhanger, so the whole Gul'dan thing was left in the lurch, and then we very quickly at the announcement, or the original announcement of Legion, got a extra cinematic of Gul'dan doing some dirt. And that was a really cool way to connect the tissue of the two expansions, whereas in the past I felt like it was like, start the expansion, there's a big dragon, he's pissed, he's coming up to destroy everything. At the end of the expansion, we've killed him, everything's good again. And then there's no real transition to the other expansions. I like the idea of there being, not necessarily a cliffhanger, but some sort of thing between us and between Legion and what's next. And I'll bet we get that again. That seems like something they like to do.
So remember that for Mists, we had what's-his-face, Angry Puss, escape the trial.
Yeah, Angry Puss.
Right, Angry Puss. You remember Angry Puss. He was like old, he had like tentacles and Sha stuff coming out of him, all of that.
Yeah, old Angry Puss.
And he escaped, right?
Yeah.
That was the link between Mists and Draenor. And similarly, and we killed him in the beginning of Draenor. And similarly, Gul'dan escaped, and we kill him in the quote-unquote beginning of Legion. And I'm sure we're going to get something to connect the two. It's looking likely that is going to be the rise of the old gods, or maybe not the old gods, but the... what's their face? The darkness... Oh, my God.
The Void. Void Lords.
The Void Lords.
The Void. Thank you. The Void Lords.
Yeah.
And there are hints in the... my wife is laughing over there. I think she's laughing at me.
What else would it be, really?
Possibly.
Listen, Finnish people don't laugh very much, but when you're around, man.
No, she's saying no. She's saying no. Right. It's not me. I still think it's me. But the Void Lords, they're already starting to hint at this. Like, there are a few of the artifact quests that you get that sort of connect the Void Lords. Like, the Void, it's something's happening with the Void Lords, and we're going to get with 725 some other things with the World Soul of Azeroth and Bronzebeard, you know, Diamond Bronzebeard, and the Void Lords, and that's going to be connected as well. So they're starting to instill it here. I'm not sure it's going to be someone who escapes or anything like that, but we're going to kill all the demons, and go to Argus and destroy all of them. And then Illidan is still going to be here, and his entire reason for being is going to be gone. Mm-hmm. I guess he's still going to have some kind of, maybe the demon-ness in him is going to die, and he's going to become normal Illidan again, and he's going to go like, Tyrande, I have never stopped loving you. And then his brother is going to go like, dude, chill, you know, we're married. So you go back and play in your, with your wardens and stuff.
Yeah.
But then maybe he's going to go like, okay, my new mission is to defeat the war, the void lords. And he's going to go and absorb some voidness and go at it again. And I mean, there's lots of strings that are still being pulled and stuff that's happening. And beyond that, I'm sorry, I'm not, I can't stop talking, but
yeah, congrats on that legendary.
Right. Anyway, leveling alts is also something you can do in the game now, because you have the invasions, which are basically world quests, but they're available for the alts as well, even if you're not 110. Mm-hmm. So you can go and get half, you know, 80% of a level by doing one invasion, the world quests and one invasion with your alts. And since you have flying, if you've unlocked flying, it's super easy. And I'm rediscovering the love of the Demon Hunter, and I'm playing my Paladin a little bit, and it's just fun. It's fun.
No, it's good. I'm glad you're all up in it again. That makes me happy.
Well, it's very clear that World of Warcraft always has the ability to grab any of us again when we actually like, and like, I think things like, you know, I mean, it's, I was joking like, oh, congrats on your legendary, but like, it is true. Like getting something like that can renew that like vigor, right? Like mm-hmm. you just, things that excite you in the game get you excited for other things. And then it's like just this rabbit hole you can keep going down.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's that's what World of Warcraft, I think, always will have for me.
Yeah.
And I think when I step away from it, it's like healthy mm-hmm. because then I come back and I'm rediscovering things again. Yeah. And that's what the game, like, if it loses that, then it's a game that will be like dead game, quote unquote. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not going to lose that, I don't think.
Yeah.
I
have this exactly the same thing for me. I'll get a wild hair one day and just go, you know what? I feel like getting that mage up to snuff. And I'll get in there and work on it for a while, and then I don't have to, you know? I mean, either way, Blizzard's getting my $15. So that's the thing that's happening. That's like, you know what, to me, it's like power or water. It's just like I have to have it on. So even if I take a huge break, they're just getting my money, I guess. That's the way it works. Anyway, well, that's great, Patrick. We're going to move on now, though, to a much different topic. And here it is. Right, that signifies the theme of the next little while that we're going to talk. The 1 year anniversary of Overwatch. We're nowhere near 10 years yet. 1 year ago, there was Overwatch released onto the public, unleashed in a way that was pretty exciting. We were all in the beta, so for us, it was more than a year. In fact, a lot more than a year. But Overwatch, 1 year old, and they're celebrating by doing an anniversary event, which is cool, I guess. The anniversary event includes 108 items. In total, that's skins, sprays, emotes, three new arena maps, the Necropolis, the Castillo, and Black Forest. These are all extensions of existing maps, just small sort of themed maps. Black Forest is just outside of Eichenwald. Castillo is just outside of Dorado, I believe.
Dorado.
Yeah, and Necropolis is all part of the Egyptian-themed stuff. What's that
Anubis,
called?
Temple Anubis. Of Anubis.
There you go. And finally, we got a dance studio. Been promised to WoW forever. Finally happened in Overwatch instead. So now you got dancing stuff happening in Overwatch, which I wondered when that was going to happen. Anyway, so let's talk just briefly about the anniversary itself, and then we can get into all the nitty-gritty here. One complaint that's been thrown at the anniversary event is that if you do the math, the skins and items are way harder to get this time around than in previous events. And
well, it's harder to get all of them,
right,
is the point.
Yeah, harder to get all of them. Like if you could go and spend, let's say, $100 during the Halloween event, and you're going to I almost can guarantee you'll get everything. I spent 30 and I got everything that event. Well, everything that I wanted, all the skins I wanted. Actually, all the skins, period. And then I got a few of the other items, and some of them I didn't get, but I didn't care so much about those. It's always true that you're playing with RNG, and you don't know if you're going to get everything or not. this particular time, it's a little bit tricky because here's the deal. If you bought everything, it would require 56,475 credits if you purchased them outright with credits. Okay, so that's more costly than any previous event. This is all according to a Polygon article that was put up yesterday. According to Redditors who have kept tabs on the math, when you look at the breakdown at this new event, you're looking at all the new skins, legendary and the rarest. All the new skins are legendary, the rarest and most expensive tier of the game. So every one of these is going to cost you 3,000 credits a piece if you're going to buy it that way. And it would take you, they estimate, and again, this is Redditors, okay? People on Reddit, sometimes this stuff can be a little fishy, but sometimes...
No, I'm pretty sure the numbers add up.
It might be right.
I think that's not the issue.
So they're saying if you wanted to do it without buying boxes...
Yeah, they generally
boxes,
get the math right, but the interpretation of what it means.
Exactly. That's sometimes the tricky part. 100 plus hours of playtime to unlock everything if you're not going to spend money. That's a lot, Patrick. 100 hours.
Well, they're also releasing a lot, right? So,
yeah.
That's the thing.
Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah.
They have 11 legendary skins. That's the first time all of them have been legendary. Sure. Usually you have some of them that are epic that cost a lot less. And there's also. All the characters have emotes, the dance emotes. They all have dance moves. And so that adds up. Obviously, you have 24 times 750 credits. So that's a lot as well. But I mean, yes, if you want to get everything, it's going to cost you a lot of credits or time or money or combination of all of those. Mm-hmm. But you're not, I don't think Blizzard is sitting there and going like, ooh, we're going to get so much good stuff that they're going to want to get everything and they're going to buy more boxes to get everything. No, you're going to probably going to want a couple of those and maybe some of the dances. If you really think that you have to have all of the dance moves, your problem is not that Blizzard is making too many emotes. Your problem is that you should reevaluate what you want and don't want. It's kind of...
Okay, that's a fair point, but you know that there is a... The way that this sort of stuff works, loot boxes or the free-to-play model, and I know the game's not free-to-play, but you know what I mean. Like, the after-the-fact, pay-for-cosmetics model of any video game, they count on a certain percentage of being your big spenders. So you're going to have some people out there that are so obsessed with getting everything that ever comes out ever that they're going to spend... copious amounts of money to make sure that that happens. And they want that category to exist. So it's not like Blizzard's, they're not, you know, benevolent back there going, well, I hope everyone's very moderate with what they're looking for this time and don't spend too much money. No, they want those guys to just shell it out and keep buying boxes. Wouldn't you? That's their business model moving forward with this game.
Yeah, of course. Sure. But I mean,
nothing to complain about.
No, that's, I guess not.
That's a company. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe this company made this many shirts and then they're going to sell them all and make all that money? Come on. You know, that's ridiculous. People complaining about it is what I find kind of funny.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think money. the big difference is what you're talking about is whales in free-to-play games. And what happens in free-to-play games is that when you spend the money, you purchase power, and that's when you get paid to win stuff. And in some of the games, you can't progress unless you buy the stuff that they're selling, including in, you know, sometimes you have like the super powerful item or the new version of the hero or stop that. What? Oh, that's a channel follow. You have those silly little pop-ups on Twitch. It was someone slapping my face on Twitch.
Oh, yeah, I didn't do that. That's only if somebody subs. So there you go. Yeah, exactly. Actually, it's not you, though. It may look like you, but it's not you. No, it's some girl.
No, it was next to me. Anyway, so the games give you power in exchange for the money. In Overwatch, it's entirely cosmetic, right? It doesn't give you don't have to have them. If those that are going to go spend all that money to get everything, it's like complaining that Nintendo releases too many figurines of some kind, or you know, you don't have
Pokemon
to
has too
them.
Many Pokemon. Mm-hmm. I can't collect them. No, that's not quite the same.
It's
thing,
not
you're
the
right.
same. Yeah. You don't pay money for, but you know, it's like I understand that if you set out to get everything and there's more stuff that's going to be available, then you are going to want to get more stuff. But the problem is that you initially set out to get everything and that it's awesome enough that you want all of it. And some people are not going to get all of it. And that plays into the age-old question of rarity and value. If everyone has everything from the first year, then it's not as valuable. It's not as fun. It's not as cool when you see one in the game. So I think that's silly.
Yeah. Well, it's now I've put Tracer on your face. You'll see that here in a minute when that comes up. Anyway.
Much better.
Yeah, you like that better? All right. So what was my next point I was going to make about that? Oh.
Tracer face is better than Taser face. Right.
Always, dude. Always. Anyway, some, you know, complain all you want, whatever. I got this text from my nephew who's all angsty about it. And he's like, oh, they're making my life so hard with these loot boxes. And I'm like, it's a weird thing to complain about. You either want them or you don't. Like for me, I'm always happy to get a weird loot box and go, whoa, look at that legendary I got. I think that stuff's great. I'm happy to spend my credits when I have them. If I have only one complaint, it would be I don't get credits often enough. Later in the show, we'll talk about what Heroes is doing and why I think they could maybe integrate some of that stuff in Overwatch. But, All of that being said, what I'm mostly concerned about is how am I playing minute to minute? I understand the value of cosmetics. I like to have them, but that is not the game I'm playing. That's not what I'm aiming for every time I get there.
Especially Overwatch, you don't even see your character while you're playing. No,
nope.
Right?
You only see your arms and maybe an emote.
Or emotes and
sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like for me, yeah, it's like the gameplay is always going to be the thing that matters the most in a game like Overwatch. And Heroes of the Storm, I'm looking at my little guy the whole time, mm-hmm. right? So skins and stuff in Heroes seems way more important to me than I get the like golden guns and that kind of stuff is definitely very. And sprays and yeah, different like voice lines. Those things seem pretty cool, but I feel like when in Overwatch, like this stuff is less important because the gameplay is just so fast and you know it's just not that style of game where like I'm just sitting there concentrated on what I look like. You know what I mean? Right. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. Yeah, I mean, part of what I like about the loot system as it exists in Heroes. Maybe we'll just talk about this now. There's something about you know, being able to see all the time what you're doing that makes a difference for me, for sure. When I'm in first person mode, I see maybe I see a cool, you know, the way the arm might look or whatever, or the way the gun's different than it usually
sure,
is. Sure,
yeah, the gun's a little different. Or, yeah.
But mostly I'm just trying to shoot other people. Like it's in the mad dash of it all, I'm just trying to kill stuff. That being said, I have also been slow to understand why, let's say, the Twitch world is so into emotes and icons and badges and that kind of stuff. And I've come to understand it. I think I understand why people like this stuff, but there's a joy for people in collecting and having and going and looking and saying, all right, I have all of these things. I've earned these things. It's part of the progression in that game. So I totally understand its value, but, I'm not the one they're counting on to pay the bills. They are counting on that 10% that are throwing $50.
I will say this though, this is a limited time thing, right? Like you can't get these forever, right? Yeah. So, I do understand if these were around forever, there'd probably be less people concerned about how much there is to get and how expensive it is because you're thinking, I got to get all this in the time frame it's available, right?
Yeah.
If they suddenly just introduced these and they're like, forever, all these 108 items will be available to you, and it's like, oh, I don't have to like get them now. I can get some of them now, and then eventually I'll get some of the other ones and whatever. That would be a different thing, I think. But when they're a limited time, then you suddenly feel pressure, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Patrick? Like the idea that they're gone after this, or will they not? I mean, at some point do they go, hey, and guess what? Those things from the anniversary, they're available now. Whee!
No, it's gotta be available during that specific period. And that's, you know, about the rarity of the item that gives it value. I think that's fine. If you want to get lots of items, you don't have to pay. You can also play a lot. Mm-hmm. And when there are the events, I often play quite a bit and get lots of loot boxes, and I often get everything I want. So it's what's the other alternative that they make everything? I think one thing they could consider is when you get a duplicate from an event item. Currently, the event items cost 3 times as much as the regular items. And when you get a duplicate, you only get the same amount that you do for a duplicate for a regular item, meaning it's really kind of wasted. So the one thing I could see is maybe you can increase the amount of credits you get for a duplicate event item. Mm. That I could kind of understand.
Yeah, but that only makes sense.
Yeah.
Weird. But beyond that, you know, it's like what they give all the items to everyone, or like they make them less expensive so that everyone can get everything, or most people can get everything. I don't see how that improves the experience for everyone. You're just going to, I mean, I don't know. If it's also about budgeting. Like, I have lots of credits left. I have maybe 6,000. So when there's one legendary skin I really like, I know I can get it. If you go and spend all your credits immediately when there's something you want, then obviously it's like real life, right?
Yeah.
If you go and spend all your money when you get your paycheck in, if you have something you want later, you're not going to be able to get it.
That's right.
But you got the thing before. It's not, I just don't understand. First of all, I don't understand the collection people, so that doesn't help. And second of all, I don't understand this entire complaint. I think it's artificial and I think it's kind of silly. And yeah. It angers me the more we talk about it.
Well, good. My goal was accomplished. That is what I meant to have happen. I whispered Dills earlier, said, dude, we got to figure out a way to piss off Patrick. So it's working. I like it. Yeah, whatever. Their model is their model. We get free characters when they come out. We get free map upgrades. We get new maps all the time. Jeff Kaplan confirmed.
We get lots of stuff.
Yeah, Kaplan confirmed a brand new heroes on the horizon. They didn't say anything else about it, except something's on its way real quick. We're getting new core maps. I think he said there are four in the works. They've got major content each month, according to a recent community chat. I watched the whole thing, and that was nice to hear. So obviously, they, a year in, feel like, you know, a steady stream of content is the way to do it. That's true across all the Blizzard games, I would guess. But I think Overwatch is in a rhythm now, and they can do this a little easier, or at least they can give us kind of a regular expectation. Anything beyond that, like expecting that you're going to spend $50 and get every legendary skin that's in this particular patch, is weird. It's kind of like going to a store at 4 a.m. on, you know, Black Friday and being sure you're going to get a Cabbage Patch doll. Nope, you might not. Although in this case, if you work hard enough, maybe you can. Do that 100 hours if that's worth it to you. If it's not, don't. Just play the game and have a good time. All right, so let's talk about where the game is now and where we may want to see it in the future. I think in the last year, I mean, certainly there have been refinements and changes and tweaks. New characters added to the mix, changed the meta all the time. They went from free-for-all, be any character you want in Quick Match to that's not a thing anymore, which made Quick Match much better for me. They've added arcade mode. They stopped doing the brawls as they were and kind of integrated them over there instead. We've had Ana. Arisa, how do you say her damn name? Still
Arisa.
Don't do her. Arisa. And who's the other new character? There's one other one. Sombra.
Sombra.
Yeah, how could I forget her? So that's three characters in a year. That's pretty good. Although, wait, Arisa came out this year, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that wasn't 2016. Anyway.
But I mean, well, in the calendar, not a calendar year, but a year.
Yeah.
The Overwatch year.
Yeah. So
Overwatch year.
So big year. They lost Metzen, but that didn't seem to slow them down at all. They seem to have a handle on story and what's up, and I can tell you that from a recent conversation I had with him, he loves the direction they're going, and it sounds like whatever was in place was in place. Kaplan's got a firm grip on what's going on over there. The other thing I really like in this last year of Overwatch is how willing he's been to front face with the community and talk and do it in a way that isn't too prepackaged, that just sort of lets him, you know, describe what they're doing and what they're working on and what they're excited about. He's become a kind of a meme unto himself, which is kind of nice. I always like when that happens. It's like the Ben Brode of the Overwatch team.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like, you know, his years in the WoW team kind of prepared him for the real job that was going to be representing the Overwatch team.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing such a great job at it. It's really, you know, it feels like other companies are now looking or should be looking at Blizzard for the way they handle their communication for a game like this one. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't so long ago that we were thinking the communication for Blizzard is not that great.
Yeah.
The developers are absent since Greg Street left. The communication on the Hearthstone team isn't great. The Heroes team is kind of silent. And now I think what Jeff has been doing and what the Overwatch team has been doing is kind of bleeding into everybody at Blizzard and possibly other places in the industry, because he is creating a sense of community and friendliness and goodwill that is palpable, I think. I think it really influences the way the community perceives the game and coalesces around the game. Of course, it's not the only thing, obviously, but it's also very important, and they're really nailing how that should work.
Yeah, and he was such a hermit in the WoW days. Like, you rarely saw him out in front of cameras or doing interviews or any of that stuff. And then when he disappeared to work on what was to be Titan, like, nothing from Kaplan. He grew a beard and turned into Alan Moore and went in a cave somewhere. Like, it was real
weird.
Well,
no one on the Titan team was.
Yeah, Jim Carrey beard, dude. That's a scary beard. But it was like that. And you just never heard anything. And then, poof, there he is. It seems like the quietest, most least approachable period for Blizzard in terms of community outreach was like 2009 till about 2013. And I cannot think about why that would be. There was someone in PR, maybe on the French side, really made it hard to
shutting everything down. Yeah.
We were preparing.
I think Titan was a big part of it, right?
Yeah. The fact that there was preparing for the next generation, right, man. That's what we were doing.
I kid.
But you know, it's really funny because he is the most nerdy of all of the spokespeople. In, you know, Brode is kind of bombastic and like he seems like a sociable person. Dustin Browder was a little bit like that as well. And Kaplan is just like this nerdy kid who was in the basement playing games for, I mean, all of them were, but Kaplan looks like it, right? Mm-hmm. And he makes this, he turns this into like a strength, or like it doesn't really matter. It's kind of endearing. Mm-hmm. And,
You can't be mad. I can't be mad at him. I can never be mad. Like, even if I'm frustrated with like, oh, I don't like the way a competitor's going, or I think they should change the way this works or whatever. I look at him on a video and go, no, I can't stay mad at you.
And he's like, hey, this is Jeff from the Overwatch team. And, you know, he's all humble and like, and he addresses all of the issues and he goes like, we're trying this here and we're trying this there. And we realized this didn't quite work out exactly the way we wanted. And they're willing to change things. They feel like they're really listening to the community, putting their foot down when it needs to be put down, but at the same time, listening to the changes that are requested when they make sense. You were talking about the fact that you can't have the same hero multiple times on the team now, which initially they didn't think that was good for the game. And ultimately they decided, you know, that's not the direction the game should go. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people were also asking if we look back for a lock on the characters you would select, you know, at the beginning, and you couldn't change characters anymore. And on that one, they said, no, we don't think that would be a good idea. So they kept, they stayed the course on that. Mm-hmm. So, but it always feels genuine and heartfelt and relatable, which is a huge issue when you're in a community and managing a community on the developer's side, trying to strike the right balance there. And somehow they've captured, you know, lightning in the bottle with that that relationship they've created.
Well, on that point, Dills, as somebody who covers extensively the Hearthstone team and what that game's doing at any given time, when that community gets mad about something's broken or too much RNG or whatever the issue of the day is, some deck's too overpowered, how much worse would it be if you didn't have Ben Brode as your kind of point man? Versus not that. What if it was just PR notices and stuff written in blogs and stuff like that, but instead you have a face to it? I mean, does that soften the blow for players? Or
certainly, yeah. But I'll also say this, that Kaplan's making everybody else look bad. He needs to stop. He needs to slow down. Because Brode is not nearly at the same level of communication and just frequency of communication that someone like Kaplan's been. So... Yeah. In a way, it's like I look at Overwatch as a guy who plays a ton of Hearthstone and focuses a lot of my time on that and covering it. And I just think, why don't we have what they have over there? Why are we not getting tons and tons of new features? Why are we not getting tons and tons of new things all the time that aren't just gameplay? Like, you know, we get the expansions all the time, right, in Hearthstone. Yeah, but
sure.
We haven't had a true new feature, really, since, I think, Tavern Brawl. Right. So, and there's things like the spectator mode doesn't get updated It still is broken when a druid casts a choose one spell and the cards are still upside down at the top, and like just things move at a different pace in a game like Hearthstone compared to Overwatch. And I also feel like Hearthstone has 70 million players compared to 30 million. And I think they're all paying more than $50 to play the game, right? Mm-hmm. So what up? And then I look over at Overwatch and I get a little jealous.
Yeah. No, it's a good point. But, I hadn't thought about that.
Or maybe it just makes me want to play Overwatch. I don't know.
I hadn't thought about that. It's funny because it's a pay. It's a, imagine if Hearthstone was a pay-for game, not a free-to-play game that you had to pay for outright like you do Overwatch. And then everything past that was what they made money on, cosmetics or new cards or whatever. But having some sort of base game, what they're doing over on Overwatch is really emblematic of what I kind of wish every team was doing. I don't know how it would apply mm-hmm. to WoW, but like Heroes is way better than they used to be. I mean, oh my gosh, even the last 6 months, Heroes is like a completely different world in terms of outreach and connecting with the community and just 2.0 in general. But I kind of wish, like you're saying, I kind of wish there was a way to say template what Kaplan's get doing and just spread that around the company. Like have
it just seems very consistent. That's really the thing. Like it's kind of whether there's a big announcement or not, there's some sort of communication going on back and forth, whether it's, you know, things like answering dumb tweet questions or things like that, that are just fun. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to always be out there announcing the next thing. He's mm-hmm. just kind of there representing Overwatch, right? And that kind of, and it's not like the Hearthstone people don't like respond to Reddit or tweets or whatever. I'm not saying like they're like shut-ins, but there's not the like these kind of weekly style almost videos where he's like constantly talking to you, right? Mm-hmm. And for a while Ben Brode seemed like he was going to start doing that. He's going to do these like little mini discussions, and then he found out that he was doing it from his own home, and I don't know if he was doing his own editing or anything too, but it was just clearly there wasn't like a team behind it. Mm-hmm. Where when you look at what Overwatch is doing, maybe it's just, you know, they have different teams and different people representing the PR departments of their different teams. And so the people at Overwatch, whoever that is in place, has just been a little more proactive. Yeah. And the Hearthstone guys are working on other stuff, you know.
There's also the fact that I'm not sure everyone can do it that way. They still have a job to do, and maybe it doesn't have to be the game director who does it. But it's really being able to do two different things. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to head your game and actually do that job. And then when you have time on top of it, go and be a community manager, essentially. So I'm not sure if it's possible for, you know, the other representatives. Maybe they can find one.
So Kaplan just got less to do. Oh, okay. I got it.
Yeah. That could be that. No, I don't know.
I think it's because Ben Brode had to kind of do all of it on his own to do that reaching out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that like Kaplan's like someone's putting him in front of a camera and giving him, there's like a set and there's stuff, and it's not just, mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like him in a room by himself, right? Yeah. So that means that someone else is like doing the legwork to get the video out, and then he can get back to his job, which maybe means it's easier for him to get out in front of everybody more often, right?
Yeah, or what it means is like doing that for the impression, though, is what you're left with is, oh, Brode is forced to do this on his own because he doesn't have any other choice, and he feels the pressure from the community to talk more, so he'll just do this, and it doesn't feel like he's got the support that Kaplan does.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this on the Angry Chicken that, you know, it was just bizarre to us that this company like Blizzard doesn't have a room Ben Brode can go into with a microphone and a camera and then pass it off to a guy to edit it, that he had to go to his house and in front of like his wall in his bedroom was making essentially like, you know, the same type of video that someone who is just a newbie on Twitch would make, right? It was just so weird to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's got to be, I know there's a studio there. I've seen it.
I'm guessing it was intentional and he thought it would be more genuine is my guess, but
Not really what he said. He explained it in a post later that the reason why he hadn't been doing a bunch of them was that it took a lot of time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Which is why we pointed out like, yeah, well, you don't have to do everything on your own, right? Aren't you at a big company like Blizzard?
It does have a way of making Overwatch look like they're really throwing their guts behind it. Whether that's true or not, whether the teams are have that disparity or not, it feels like Overwatch has all guns blazing, everybody's on deck, push, push, push every minute you can. Make sure people are thinking about Overwatch. And I think it works. You know, I mean, I know people who have more or less dedicated their entire gaming life to Overwatch, and that's all they want to play right now. I'm not that kind of gamer. I like to, you know, come and go and return and play other things and stuff. But I think it works. Like coming out and saying, hey, we just finished a big event. Remember all those cool skins you got? Guess what? We're having the 1 year one. And right after that, they'll have one in the spring. Who knows what it'll be, but it'll be something. Or in the early summer, rather, or whatever. And they just keep going and going and going. And I don't, I assume that that's sustainable, but maybe Hearthstone's just treated like, I don't know, maybe they just see it different. Maybe internally they're just like, well, it's 70 million. That's a lot of people. We're fine. We don't need to go nuts. You know, we're on mobile, blah, blah, blah. Like maybe there's some excuse there. I don't know. I'm always very curious about
that. I think it's different teams heading up this type of activity with it. Like, you know, because it's not, I think if Ben Brode was being told, we've got an idea for a video, you just need to come down here and get in front and answer these tweets. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'd be like, no, I don't got time for that. I think it's just there's nobody on the Hearthstone PR department team right now who's like really heading that up, right? Which is something like if I was there, I would do because I'm a video guy, right? I'm a broadcast major. There's a lot of people there who are doing different things.
Sure.
It's not necessarily
I'm having flashbacks.
Uh-oh, what are you having flashbacks from? Job. Oh, yeah?
And it's funny, you know, I'm starting to lose that knowledge, memory of what it was to actually be working in the PR team. And I only see, I don't quite see how the sausage is made anymore. You know, it's been over a couple of years, I think. Thank you for that little Junkrat tag. It's perfect.
Sorry. I got a little carried away. Go ahead.
And I'm starting to forget how the sausage is made. And sometimes when I hear the speculation and, you know, on this show from myself as well, I'm like, wow, I'm reminded how much off base I thought we were when we were discussing all of those things before I joined the company. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, this is so not how all of this is working, mm-hmm. you know? And a lot of people try to do different things and there are lots of different priorities. And sometimes the thing that you think from the outside should be obvious and maybe even from the inside should be obvious don't happen because there are a lot of parameters you don't even know from the inside, and there are priorities and there are, and I mean, yeah, it's just, it feels like I'm back at work and in the PR department and thinking, yes, we're going to do this, this and that. And hearing you, Dill, say, oh, maybe the people in the PR team aren't really thinking like this because they're not video people. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they're thinking about all of this and discussing all of this.
Well, but to be fair, it doesn't matter if they really are or not. Like, all that matters to us is that it doesn't look like they are.
Yeah,
right?
That's so true.
I don't really give a crap how the sausage is made. I'm eating the damn sausage, right? So this sausage doesn't taste as good as that other sausage over there, so I'm not going to buy this sausage as much. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's... I get what you're saying, but, you know, the gamers and the people who play the game are not, they don't have an extensive knowledge of how PR departments work.
Of course.
So all they see is the outward product that they're being displayed. So when they see that there's very professional videos being made for Overwatch, and then they see Hearthstone and they see Ben Brode in his bedroom, it's going to look, there's a dichotomy, like they're going to see the comparison, right? Like they're not going to look at that and be like, oh, that's charming. They're going to say like, oh, they're not throwing anything behind that, right? Mm-hmm. That's a natural assumption to make, I think.
Yeah,
so,
I think so.
It's not really their fault for making that assumption, or not my fault for making the assumption. It is like the natural way to go in your brain if you don't work in PR.
So. Yeah, if the other team's making, if they the better one team does over the other team just look bad, not bad but different. You know, like
just different. Yeah, I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt here that it's not necessarily that Ben Brode doesn't want to do videos or whatever. Right. That there's somebody who has taken it upon themselves and the Overwatch team to be really proactive about this. And, you know, I've worked in big companies with lots of multiple departments. Sometimes there's somebody who's like above and beyond in certain departments doing something crazy. and it's really good. And sometimes then that moves over into other departments as well. People see what they're doing and see how well it's working. Mm-hmm. So my only real hope here is that what Overwatch has been doing with this kind of reaching out consistently does kind of spread out into the rest of Blizzard and becomes more of the culture. Because it doesn't have to be. And it wasn't necessarily previously just for video game companies to come out and always be talking to you, right?
Right.
But now we have these games where people play them for years. I mean, talk about World of Warcraft. We're talking, you know, 12 years of playing a single game. It's not like you're buying a title and then a few months later you're buying the next hot title, right? You're playing games for
Blizzard expects every game, specifically Blizzard, expects every game they make to never be a year over year, let's do a sequel next year kind of game experience. Everything they build, they want a decade or more out of that stuff. And it's been true since the beginning. And we're about to play StarCraft Remastered. Well, why? Well, because it has staying power. And we're still playing World of Warcraft because it has incredible staying power. We'll still be playing Overwatch in 5, 6, 10 years because it'll be a breathing game that they continue to add to and make awesome. That's just what they do. So so hopefully, I hope is you're right. I hope that it spreads. But more than that, maybe the Kaplan model and whoever, because I agree with you, there's probably somebody who's just, hey, I know video, I know this stuff, we can do this, I'll work nights until it's right, it won't cost us anything else. Like, I can almost hear these meetings, right? And then if that person or that group can somehow convince the powers that be that maybe there should be a overall Blizzard, maybe even a department in charge of this. Like, there's one department in charge of animating a bunch of cinematics for internal and external stuff. So why can't there be a team that's focused on, here's the studio, get in here, Heroes team, it's your week, get in here, Hearthstone team, and Ben Brode, it's your time. Like, why can't that be brought out into a bigger role at the company itself rather than a team-by-team thing? That's what I want to know. Because it feels very
inconsistent. I just want to address somebody in chat said, it came up to me as something Ben just decided he wanted to do and worked on it at home and put it on the internet. I thought it was kind of cool. I think you're thinking of the rap song that he did after Ungoro, and that was definitely different, but there was a time he's done about three of these over the past 2 years, which were sit down conversations about issues the community had brought up. So I'm not talking about the rap video, that's a different thing. Yeah. And he had kind of addressed it as if these were things he wanted to do consistently, and then they just stopped happening. So like, that's more what I'm referencing here. The rap video was definitely like, if Jeff Kaplan wanted to just do a rap video on his own, I'm sure that's not really the same thing. The Brode rap thing was very much appreciated. I really enjoyed it.
I never did hear what happened to the Blizz. Remember the Blizzcast thing, Patrick, they were doing? It was like a podcast, and they had like four, and then they stopped doing it and never heard about it again. I missed that. That was great. It's like a nice little look at things. And so that kind of stuff strikes me as somebody internally had a great idea. Somebody tried to get it through. Didn't have the
momentum. For the Blizzcast specifically, I think it was a different time, and the communication of the company was much more controlled, and they basically everything outwards facing was checked by every stakeholder involved.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult to put out the Blizzcast thing.
That's changed a lot, hasn't it, since then? I mean, now
it has changed enormously.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, they're just putting it on us. Like last time I interviewed Russell, I said, "So talk to your PR person and let me know." And he goes, "Oh, I don't have to do that anymore." I'm like, "Oh." Okay, because back in the day, I had to jump through hoops. There had to be two people in that office at the same time. You couldn't do it live. And even when you were done, they'd say, all right, we need to go back 15 minutes in, take that line out. And he didn't mean to say this. And like, that was just 2010. I mean, I know that's seven years now, I mean, but still.
It was the when people started getting on Twitter, there was a big question about who was allowed to, you know, talk on Twitter. Like if you were, you couldn't put in your bio that you were working at Blizzard because it was like, then it made you a speaksperson, or it was really, but you know, ultimately I think Greg is probably to be credited for a little bit of that changing of the company. Of course, he was one of the spokespeople, but he was also very communicative. And when he left, the void was very much felt. And of course, you know, the social media was happening and all of this. So it was kind of difficult to contain everything and to control the communication as much as before. So things evolved naturally. But
Yeah, no, yeah. I agree. Greg deserves a ton of credit for that. He still does it, even in WoW's behalf when he doesn't work there. So you'll still get him answering questions about design choices and decisions. And
well, I think that in the kind of grand scheme of things, letting something slip isn't like the end of the world, right? Mm-hmm. I think maybe there was, yeah, I mean, but it probably wasn't even then. It just felt like,
no, it wasn't. But for Blizzard, yeah. It was like, yeah, for,
yeah, exactly. Internal. But I mean, that's the thing. Like they had the fear that it was going to mm-hmm. have some terrible impact. And then Greg Street kind of like, I think broke that mold a little bit. And then it was like, oh, well, this actually is kind of okay mm-hmm. to just give a little leash to people.
Yeah.
It turns out it is okay. And it actually kind of makes, I think, people even feel a little more comfortable when they feel like they're getting an honest response from people working on the game that they love, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to, his old line was, I'm totally off the leash or whatever. Like, that mm-hmm. was his thing for a while, is that he was the guy that was saying things nobody else would say. And I have to assume that there was some, never ever asked him this, but maybe we'll ask him in Intertacular, but I always assume that he was taking some heat for that. Or at the very least,
there must have been some backlash.
Yeah,
at some point.
Had to be people going, "Hold on, Greg, be easy, go easy there, buddy," or whatever. I don't think so.
I don't think so. You know, he showed up one day in the team and he started doing it because that's what he likes to do, and it provided. You know, it's not like the company or the team was unaware of the benefits that they would get from it. It was useful. Mm-hmm. And he is also incredibly responsible, and he has a talent for diffusing situations, you know, so
yeah.
when people go at the team and start getting angry, he doesn't react in a way that is inflammatory in any way. He's just going to, you know, maybe he's not going to answer, but if he does, he's going to be very much like Jeff does. You know, he answers and he says, yes, that's a good point. And, you know, we thought about this, but that's why we didn't go that way. And we believe that this is the reason why we didn't make that choice. And that's, you know, and when people answer and speak like this, you kind of, it's hard to remain super angry, kind of like we were saying before. You then Jeff comes on the thing and he goes, hi, it's Jeff from the Overwatch team. And you can't be angry.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of. Yeah. It's
totally true. Now, do you guys think that the game has more single-player potential in the next year than they've currently given us? So I'd just like to lay out a scenario here where Overwatch decides to perhaps backtrack just a tiny bit to its MMO roots. You know, there have been some off and on the records alluding to the idea that some of the events so far have been indicative of the kinds of things you might have experienced in a kind of a raid scenario or a dungeon scenario, for lack of a better term, more like strikes in Destiny, for example, where you and, you know, four of your buddies do a thing. Those events were a lot like that. The Halloween event and the other one, forgot the other one, whatever that was. What was the one?
Uprising.
Yeah, Uprising. So I think it would be really cool. This is not a prediction that they'll do it, but it'd be really cool if in 2018, 2017, 2018, we could see another shift more in that direction with content that is not just there for an event and then pulled out. I realize they're in a bit of a pattern right now, and this seems like the model moving forward, where it's like a quick one off, then it's out of the game, quick one off, out of the game, and then small stuff gets pushed into arcade or whatever. I would love it if we could just have more permanent status co-op experience stuff in that game. Am I alone here, Patrick? Do you want that in your Overwatch or not?
Do I want it? Of course.
Yeah.
But there is a giant game design shaped issue in that conversation. I think for temporary events, it's very easy, and I think it's pretty, you know, it's a given that we're going to see more of those. For a consistent single player or co-op rather experience, the problem is any game that is asking you to play for a long time and is not player versus player needs to have some kind of progression, and if you're not progressing in some way, then you're not going to be playing. And the mode that would be there permanently would grow stale incredibly fast. That's why you have, you know, in WoW, in Diablo, in Destiny, in The Division, those infinite games, you have the loot grind, you have the item hunt, you have all of those things that keep you coming back. And I think it would be a massive undertaking to create that for Overwatch, and it would be an entirely separate game. You know, it wouldn't just be, oh well, we could add appearances or cosmetic items, or because they're already kind of in the game and it doesn't work. I think it would require a lot more game design and thoughts than we realize, and it's not gonna happen.
I keep thinking in my head that they've already got a lot of this done, and I know this is naive or whatever it is, but
what is it though?
Well, I don't know.
Try to take the thought further. What do you get in that single player or co-op mode that keeps you coming back if it's not items?
Okay, so if it's not items, I'm actually arguing that you could make it items. And the reason I'm arguing that is nobody knows loot and the draw of, hey, here's something on a carrot for you, everybody, than Blizzard. They'd know it better than anybody. So them integrating some sort of, even if it was just, I'm doing this single player over and over thing, this co-op experience on multiple maps to grind access to cosmetics, I think even that's a step in the right direction. But I also
would you play Uprising or Junkenstein for, you know, a year?
Well, if they were the only ones on there, probably not. But if you gave me 5 or 6 single player scenarios that were they're kind of horde mode push style map kind of things, I think I would like that. I mean, I really liked that Junkenstein thing a lot, and I played it
a ton. For a week.
Yeah, exactly. I understand that. And it can get, I mean, I understand why they, Blizzard's all about variety. That's one thing you see in Heroes of the Storm. Dota's got one map. League of Legends has one map. Heroes of the Storm has 11, 13, whatever it is, maps now. And why? Because I think Blizzard values variety. They value mixing it up and changing it around and having a new thing to do. So you're right in that. Here's where I think you're right. I think it's possible. But I don't think Blizzard wants to just go that far. They would want more variety than that, and therefore it probably is too much of an undertaking. But there's a spark of something in those experiences that was so compelling that it made me hunger for more of it. And it tasted like a different game, but still a game I love in that universe. But it tasted like something that may have almost happened. Oh, I don't know, like Titan, for example.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they couldn't make Titan work.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to side with Patrick here that I think they should just stick with what the game is good at, which is PvP, mm-hmm. and really focus and double down on that. Like, I think about World of Warcraft sometimes. And I think that trying to fit PvE and PvP into one giant box was something that was just such a struggle for so long. Mm-hmm. Right. And it still is to this day.
Right.
And maybe both sides are slightly weaker for it. Right. As strong as both sides actually are, as good as WoW PvP and WoW PvE content has been for so long, if one or the other wasn't always trying to be, like, they were always kind of pushing against each other, right? And if we try to then take Overwatch and have them push against each other again, it might be a negative. Like, you could just think, you know, Diablo is your PvE game, Overwatch is your PvP game, Heroes is a PvP game, mm-hmm. Hearthstone's a PvP game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Blizzard probably might even have learned a lesson from trying to put everything into one game and maybe realized that isn't necessarily the best thing to get to do for to have it be the strongest possible experience when you're actually playing against 6 other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you then split off and then say, well, we also have to do this, maybe you're just kind of losing sight of what makes the game so damn great in the first place. And I do agree those little things are fun, but I don't think they'd be fun 100 times in a row. I think they're fun for a week, and then because they're different and they're interesting and they're cool. But if I felt like I had to grind that Halloween event, mm-hmm. I would probably get very bored of it very fast.
Yeah. No, you're probably right.
Darksting77 in the chat room is saying, well, look at Left 4 Dead. It's pure co-op and there's little progression there. Absolutely true. And I think The Left 4 Dead is probably the best example you will ever find of non-grindy, non-progression co-op, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the most fun games there is in that style.
Totally agree. Yeah.
But Left 4 Dead, you play it for a month, 2 months, maybe three, and then you stop.
Or you mess with mods because it's a moddable game and that has some extra life, but sure.
And you're right. I mean, I'm sure some people are still playing Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2 today. I'm sure there are some of those people.
Sure.
But when we're talking about Blizzard, we're talking about communities of millions and millions of players that are hungry for content and for new stuff all the time. Yeah. I don't think something like Left 4 Dead would satisfy them, especially in the context of Overwatch.
Sure. One of the things that gave me hope for a while was there was some new hires at Blizzard saying, we need people to work on a next generation shooter engine. And this is post release of Overwatch. So my theory was, well, they're talking about the Overwatch engine, but what are they doing with it? Are they doing something else? Are they doing something in the Overwatch space? Are they going to do single player content in there? So I let my imagination run wild, and I have this secret wish that I could get that kind of stuff. But then it also occurs to me, approving the idea and having Destiny 2 on the same launcher as Overwatch kind of negates the need for Overwatch to be much more than it is. I'm not saying that it's always going to be the same players getting their two different fixes. I understand that some players are never even going to touch, you know, Destiny when it comes on there. But there's this, you know, it's now a shooter on there that is basically going to solve your loot grind cooperative thing.
To an extent.
Yeah.
You know, just to be clear, I don't want to say we're never going to see an Overwatch single player experience. I'm just saying it's such a big undertaking, it's probably going to be an entirely different game. Yeah. If it's a full co-op thing.
Yeah. And not soon either. Like we're talking.
I don't think so. Right. I think it's going to be events for a long time, but Destiny is kind of that. It's a very different game, but as we mentioned last week, it's such a good game, and it doesn't scratch the Overwatch itch. I think that's a misconception that many people might have. Yes, it's an FPS, but maybe it's because I've only played it on consoles. It's so much slower that it's not really the same thing. It really scratches the Diablo WoW loot grind itch more than the FPS.
It's a good shooter and it feels good to shoot, but I totally agree with that. And
it's the best shooter single player shooter I've ever.
Yeah, played. It feels really good. It's going to feel even better on your keyboard and mouse, but it's a little. I don't like that comparison. People are like, well, you already got a shooter on there. Why do you need another one? Well, because that's like saying, well, I've already got Diablo 3. Why do I need another isometric game where I'm looking at a dude in Heroes? Well, they're totally different games, even though, sure, they share some control aspects and stuff, but people need to calm down about that. Or just don't play Destiny. It's not like you have to install the damn thing. It'll just sort of be there. And
I think a lot of people are going to be surprised that they enjoy it.
Oh, I'm going to play the hell out of it. I can't wait.
It's
going to be
Destiny
good.
Destiny is going to be cool. But it's completely different. You know, it's two very different offerings.
Right. Totally, for sure. All right. Well, I think that about covers it. Any other thoughts you guys have about... I know there's a lot going on with competitive. There's a lot happening with Overwatch League, and they got that new Farm League basic thing. What's it called?
The Contenders.
Contenders.
Overwatch Contenders.
My daughter wants to do that for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, is she master? You have to be master.
I know. I told her that, and she says, well, I'm getting there. I'm like, all right, well... She just has high hopes.
How good is she?
She's pretty good. She's pretty good.
What rank is she?
I don't remember. I'd have to find out. But she, we win games. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, she's better than you expect. And also, she's working.
She's better than me is what you meant to say.
That's what I meant to say. She works up at the University of Utah now, where she's also going to school. But she's part of the department that's launching this new esports initiative. And... They've already made some announcements, so League of Legends is coming on board. There's all this hope about what will come out of Blizzard. Nobody knows yet because it hasn't been officially announced, but it should be soon. But anyway, so she's surrounded by these people all day who are all trying to be competitive Overwatch and Heroes players and League of Legends players and everything, and she can't help but have some of that robot thing, I think, is what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
That's very cool.
That's pretty good.
I would say this for Overwatch and competitive play. One thing that I really want from them is because I don't play a ton of Overwatch, mm-hmm. and when I watch Overwatch, I tend to not understand what the hell is going on. So I hope that that's a big focus for them when they really want to make Overwatch. I really do think that one of the games that's being overlooked by a lot of people as far as esports and what should be on TBS or whatever, mm-hmm. is maybe not necessarily CSGO, but maybe something like Rocket League. Mm-hmm. That's a game that someone who doesn't play video games can watch and they can understand what's going on. Like, oh, yeah, it's cars playing soccer. I get it. I want to be able to look at Overwatch and be like, oh, that big monkey just jumped in and started beating the hell out of people.
Yeah,
I saw it and it made sense to my eyes.
Yeah.
And I feel like right now it's there's still oh, at it's that not place, there. Which is
it's not there yet.
It's, yeah, it needs it's to really be hard to do. And I understand that. But I think that's got to be a focus if they really want the league to take off and more than people who just play Overwatch. Because you have to find, I think esports has to find that market of people, because nobody plays football who watches football, right? All the fat guys at my pool hall who are playing, like watching every single football game every Sunday, they did not all come up in the system playing college ball and stuff, but damn, they love some football.
Right.
And if we can make it so that people who don't play Overwatch can watch it, it is a game I think that has that potential to me.
I do
like,
too.
Because the characters are so cool, because the world looks so cool, because everything is so smooth. Now we just need to make it so that that comes across visually while people are playing these 6-on-6 matches.
There needs to be free. There needs to be free floating cameras. By that I mean something that captures.
Looking at it from above, which I really like, and then being able to show replays from first player perspective might be good, but it's really hard to understand what's happening. And I know that the purists out there are going to say, but I want to see the 360 no scope that the guy just did. Like, that's what I care about.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, but we don't ever see, like, here's Tom Brady's point of view.
Yeah.
You know, you just watch them play.
Yeah, they do that. What they'll do is they'll put Tom Brady's point of view and a microphone on him for some weird replay or recap or something later. Let's see that play again from his view. That's fine. Let's do that. But for the most part, let's see the field. Let's see the map. Let's see where Junkrat got sniped from. Let's see all that happen. And let's see it. And then bring it up close and personal for your replays and stuff. That's fine.
That is absolutely an issue. And I think they're aware of it. And I think the esports community is very much aware of it as well. So if they want to have a healthy esports scene, they're going to have to find a way to make this palatable to, because even players who play a lot don't really understand everything that's happening.
Right.
It's too confusing.
Right.
So I think that's definitely an area that needs some work. Mm. I also think that the way they're approaching their esports league is going to provide a lot of that incentive for people to follow along, in the sense that there's going to be a lot of local stories. It's kind of, you know, similar to regular sports. It's similar to Heroes of the Dorm. And it's something that a lot of people in esports have been saying for a long time. If the team that's playing is, you know, Evil Geniuses and Luminosity, it's like gobbledygook, right? And if the teams that are playing are Texas and, you know, I mean, Austin and whatever, Paris and London, you want to get behind those teams a lot more.
Yeah.
So I think that is it. They're maybe equally important. Maybe, you know, understanding what's happening is even more important, but it's going to do a lot of the job to have local stories being built and those storylines and those players that you can root for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. Well, all right then. We got an email about this very subject. We'll check that out. Look what I found. This is awesome. Bit victory sound or song. How cool is that?
How iconic are those music?
Oh, they're amazing.
Those pieces that already, you know, a year in, it's like there are two or three pieces that you start the thing and you're like, your heart grows three sizes and you're like, you feel like a superhero.
It's great. I never get tired of it. Yeah. I love hearing it. I love when the match is about to end and things are nuts. I love that build
up.
This
is one thing
music.
Blizzard does better than anybody. I mean, I've been playing Hearthstone for 4 years now.
Yeah.
I'm not sick of that music.
Yeah, I know.
Every time I turn on Overwatch.
It's impressive, man.
I'm like, yes. I don't know what they got some magic sauce.
Yeah, there it is.
The music.
Yeah, how can you get sick of it? I mean, I love interviewing their music people, and I feel like we don't get the opportunity to do that enough. They are unsung heroes. They end up not getting the limelight at BlizzCon. They get a little bit of stuff, but I think they should get more. I freaking love it. And the theme for this stuff is so good. Is that Acre? I think it's Neil Acre did that. Anyway, here's the email we got at theinstance@gmail.com. It is directly related to today's Overwatch focus, and it says this. Hey, Instance guys, love the show. Quick Overwatch question for you. Do you get the impression that Blizzard is doing so well with Overwatch that they are kind of overcompensating for the fact that they never got the original MMO made in this world? In other words, are they the kind of company that was so determined to turn lemons into lemonade that we got Overwatch as a result? Just something to think about. Best regards, John Hallstrom is his name. I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, we've heard in the post sort of Titan interviews where Kaplan and Metzen and others sort of lamented what had happened and what they were doing moving forward, that Overwatch became their salvation. It was a way of pulling themselves out of the rubble and making something out of it. So I don't think his impression's wrong. I don't think it's maybe he's not saying it's a negative thing, but the word overcompensating is kind of a pejorative in this case. But I think it's they've successfully dusted themselves off from one of the video game world's biggest internal failures and made something really rad out of it.
Yeah, I don't think it's overcompensating. I think it's literally compensating, right?
Yeah. Like, there you go. Yeah, no, that's the right word. They've compensated for, I don't know, it's hard to call it a failure.
Plus years or whatever into a game, and then they're like, well, this isn't working. Let's pivot. Mm-hmm. And then that 3+ years wasn't a complete waste, right?
$100-something million down the toilet. I mean, it was no small, you know, bump in the road for them, but
Overwatch is now a $1 billion game.
Yeah, so,
exactly.
You know? Yeah, it's made.
They raised their hand into that toilet and pulled all that money back and found more.
That's the secret.
Yeah,
but you know, there's definitely a, I don't know if you can call it an underdog story or comeback or, you know, but they weren't. It's not like you can decide that you're going to make a great game, and it happens. You just, you know, it's, you don't, you do, you try to make a game and it fails. And it's not like you can think, all right, you know, we made a game that failed. Now we're going to make a game that succeeds.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, they just tried to make another game and try to make it as good as they could. And it happened to be an amazing game and that the world really resonated with the thing. And it's a huge success. I don't know if there's compensation there for the team. There's I'm certain, and for the company even, a feeling of, oh my God, we made it, and we made it even better than we thought we ever could, given what's happened before. But I don't know if overcompensating is a word.
I honestly think though too that Blizzard is maybe the only company that would just scrap the entire thing and start fresh and try a different direction, because a lot of companies would just put the damn game out.
Yep.
And just be like, you know what? It's flawed. It's whatever. It's not what we wanted it to be. It's not quite working. Whatever. We put all this money in, put the thing out, make some of it back. Right. I think a lot I've played a lot of these games where it's very clear that the vision wasn't achieved.
Yeah. And or at least not
the
yet.
The game was out anyway. Yeah. I still spent my $50 or whatever. Right.
Yep. Yep.
And in this case, I'm much happier with this type of decision making. Is pull it back, find something that's going to work. I don't want to put this out.
Yeah.
That's even better.
Yeah.
For all the crap that Activision gets, and they get a lot of crap, the fact that they didn't force Blizzard to put something out, because at this point, it's not like, you know, we just don't care. We're not going to put it. It's lots and lots of money. I think they could have pressured people into releasing something. Even this similar thing with Destiny, you know, when they really abandoned Destiny in the last year, not abandoned, but the team that was on Destiny was really small and they didn't release the Destiny 2 the year they were supposed to. And Activision was behind them. So I think it's a testament to the fact that not just Blizzard, but Activision has pretty good vision for all of those things, and it pays off. So of course they're going to listen to the people who know what they're talking about.
Do you think it helps that Bobby Kotick, head of Activision, used to be a direct employee of Blizzard? Used to be, what was he? He had what was his title before the merger? Anyway, but you know what
was
I mean?
He?
I think so.
Of Blizzard?
Yeah, didn't it do? Hold on. Early Ventures. Yeah. Okay. Hold on. Maybe not. Maybe I thought he did and he didn't.
I don't think so. I don't. I think he's been at Activision forever.
Yeah, I don't remember now. Dang it. All right. Yeah, there was something, though, about previous life before that, but maybe not. Maybe I have this wrong. But he does, I guess what I'm saying, and it's good, I guess, but he seems to have a grasp on what makes Blizzard great, and he doesn't want to mess with it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a weird relationship, but I like it a lot. I like how they worked it out.
Well, if he didn't manage to or insist or anything to push out something out of Titan, then it means that he listens to the people who are there and you know understands what's happening.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, we hope they keep doing that, and we hope you guys keep sending us your emails. We did get a tweet today as well. This is for you, Patrick. Matt Pinkham, I assume is how you say that, not Pinkham, on Twitter asked, Patrick, who is your favorite Overwatch character to play, and who is your favorite lore-wise? So since you're playing probably more than any of us, what do you, where do you sit on that right now?
You know, Overwatch is a weird game because kind of in the same way, well, I guess it's not weird for Blizzard, but there is something to be loved gameplay-wise in every character, you know, in the same way that there is something in every class in WoW and in every class in Diablo. Sometimes you might think, well, I'm not really going to like this thing. It's not my thing. And you play them and you find the joy in the gameplay loop of that character. So I really love all of the characters in Overwatch. I think my favorite one to play is probably Soldier, because when I try to rank, it's the easiest one to try and affect your team's performance, because you can do a lot of things and you can, you know, you can have an impact on the game, a visible impact on the game. So maybe Soldier. Junkrat has my heart, though.
Yeah.
His, you know, his gameplay, his kit, and his style is incredibly fun. But I really love all of them.
Yeah, they're all good. I don't like it. There's no character I actively dislike. I like playing every single one of them, but lore wise, there's some that drive me nuts. Like, I love playing D.Va. She's maybe my favorite tank right now. I cannot stand everything she says, and her entire background drives me nuts. GG, nerf this, blah, blah, Mountain Dew, you know, like, it's annoying. That Mountain Dew reference is for Bo.
I understand, yeah. She is a little bit. Oh, by the way, I think someone, I thought someone should go get the D.va domain name.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome. And then I looked up what the VA domain was, and it's the Vatican. So I'm guessing it's not going to happen.
Really?
Thinking it's not going to happen.
Nope. Confirm. Pope's a D.va main. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
He's into it, man.
Lore-wise, I don't think we can say lore-wise, but maybe attitude-wise. Mm. I love Reaper, the Edgelord, because he's so dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I heard Anna, was it Anna? It's Tracer who has a line when she kills Reaper. Sometimes, very rarely, she goes, death comes. It's so perfect.
Wow. Really good impression there.
Thank you. I'm a professional tracer.
Nice work.
And Anna, when she kills Widowmaker, mocks her as well. She goes like, one shot, one kill, and you know, laughs it off.
Sure.
So that's excellent.
Good.
But I think my favorite line, maybe not the favorite lore-wise, but my favorite line in the entire game is probably McCree saying, justice ain't gonna dispense itself. I think that's brilliant.
That's pretty good.
It's brilliant.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Do you have favorites, Dills, in the lineup?
Well, favorite to play, and some people are gonna think that that's stupid and lame, but I really like playing Torbjorn.
Yeah, he's great.
Torbjorn's so fun. It's like a little chess game. You're trying to figure out where you can put your turret down, where they won't actually be able to get to it. And obviously, like when you used to be able to do the, there's three Torbjorns, and oh my God, what do we do? That kind of stuff. That was pretty frustrating in a lot of situations. But now that you can only have the one, it feels a lot more like he's actually more useful, I think, in a lot of ways, because he's actually not very good against good players. Mm-hmm. They know how to kill turrets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but now you have to really figure out where to put that thing down. So, I don't know. I quite enjoy the challenge of doing that, and also trying to, you know, maintain, like, I'm dealing damage, I'm giving armor, I'm doing all the little things Torbjorn does as well to kind of help the team. But as far as like lore, soldier.
Right? Soldier's great. How can you not like soldier? Yeah, I mean, he's a trope, but he's awesome in lots of ways. Mm. I love it.
He's also one of my favorites to play too. But I don't know, like, there's just something kind of cool about, you know, this old soldier guy who's still in the battlefield. You know, just I can't quit you fighting.
You know, I really love the fact that they cater with multiple characters to the older gamers, yeah. And of course, it's exaggerated, but when Soldier goes, like, you know, he goes with his get off my lawn, mm-hmm. for people like us who have been gaming for 20 plus years, and I'm sure there are older gamers even, but who have been gaming for 20, 30 years, sometimes more, and who see all those kids that are 18, 20, 22, and who are like, oh, I used to play Halo in high school or whatever. And you're like, when Halo came out, I was like working. Yeah. I had a job.
Yeah.
You kind of feel a little bit like Reinhardt, who's like, oh, this old dog can learn a few tricks. And, you know, all of those older, or Anna, or...
That's because everybody at Blizzard, everybody on that team's our age. That's why.
Yeah.
And so they like to do it this way. Like the best emote dance by far for this event is Soldier 76's dad dance. It's amazing. It's amazing.
He's so awkward.
It's the best.
I will, however, fight you on the best dance. I think Reaper might have the best one.
Where he's just standing there tapping his foot, that one?
Yes, because that's exactly the character. They were saying, you know, we were imagining what they would do at a party. And Reaper is a freaking, you know, emo, goth, horrible, you know, a person. And he would, of course, not be going to dance with the cool kids. He would be like, I despise all of you, but yet I'm at the party because I might get some. Yeah. You know, you never know.
That's a good point. So, yeah, I'm giving it to Soldier 76 for that. But yeah, the game's just teeming with that kind of stuff. It's great. And, you know.
Yeah, we didn't even mention Genji.
No, Genji's great.
Robot ninja.
Oh, speaking of Torbjorn, by the way. So he's not in Heroes of the Storm, but when I play on the Hanamura map and you kill the mercs that give you the turret, mm-hmm. when I put that turret on top of our payload on Hanamura, I always yell that stupid, I have big plans for you thing he always says. I think it's starting to annoy people, but I'm going to keep doing it because Torbjorn's spirit is with me when I'm mm-hmm. playing Heroes of the Storm.
Putting a turret on the top of a payload.
That's exactly right.
Very Torbjorn.
If you have your own thoughts via Twitter, that's fine as well. Instance Show for Twitter. You can also email us your questions at theinstance@gmail.com. It's going to do it for us. Before we get out of here, though, quick round the horn about who's doing what. Patrick, what do you got going on this week?
Let's say I have the Phileas Club, where we always get people from different countries. We just recorded an episode, and I figured we're going to talk a lot about politics and, you know, what's happening with Trump and the French election and some things in Brazil. But I also figured, you know what? I'm a horrible liberal, and I already know what my friends think and what my filter bubble thinks. So I'm going to invite a couple of conservative friends from the U.S. and other people, and we're going to get what they think about all of this and how they view all of it. And I'm going to burst that filter bubble. And by God, I still don't agree with them, but at least we had a nice conversation.
Yeah,
and
no.
That's the most important part.
That is I'm telling you, you're doing like Zeus's work here. This is, nobody else seems to be doing that. No one's having the real conversations. Phileas Club always having it. So worth checking that out. FrenchSpin.com.
And of course, absolutely
not Patrick.
And also, I have a tracer on my head.
You did. You don't. Stream. You don't now, but you're delayed, so you don't know. Hey, Dills, what's going on? Streaming stuff always, man. Always.
Yep. So twitch.tv/WheelieDills. And this month, still trying to get Legend in Wild, and I'm at rank 2 right now, so we're close.
Wow.
Just gotta push through a little bit. But check out the Angry Chicken if you like Hearthstone. And on Twitter at Willie Dills. And then if you want to play Hearthstone and you want to find a league that's full of people just having a good time, Dills Hearthstone League is a thing. Check out my Twitch channel to find out more information about that.
Do you feel like your mediocre golf club experience for so many years has contributed to running a, you know, kind of a grounds or a grassroots level Hearthstone tournament
club? Possibly, yeah. But MGA is like, we make money off of that. Those Hearthstone League, I kind of do because it's people who are patrons and subs and stuff, but
right.
It's not quite in the same vein, right?
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, the same, it is definitely the same spirit, which is you should come, you should have a place where you can come and play whatever freaky weird deck you want to play.
That's right.
And there's not a bunch of money on the line. You don't have to feel pressured into playing the latest net deck that you find on tempostorm.com. You can come and you can play your weird, like, I play all the giants in one deck or whatever, like, whatever the hell you want to do.
Yeah.
It's more than welcome in the Dills Hearthstone League.
No rules at the Dills Hearthstone League. All right.
Well, there's some rules.
There's always some rules.
Exactly.
Check this. Oh, by the way, this song here. This is all Soldier. This is so good. Enemy contact. Let's get this part here. Powered up. Oh, yeah, dude. Soldier 76 doing it right. That's going to do it for us. Theinstance.net is our website. You can go there and get all the details you need about how to get the show, where to get it, how to get it, whatever. We put this on YouTube. We put it on SoundCloud. Of course, the traditional podcast methods work as well. And you're all welcome to get it however you get it. Theinstance.net is where you go. At Instance Show on Twitter, not Patrick, Willie Dills, and me at Scott Johnson. More shows like this at frogpants.com. I think Terpster is up for a lore show next week, so we'll let you know. I got to talk to him again, but that may be coming up very next episode. It's going to do it for us. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Griping about the cost of artifact power leads to a case of be careful what you wish for. It's the Overly Dramatic News. I'm Hunts the Wind. As players delve ever deeper into the secrets of their artifact weapons, one thing has become clear. The amount of artifact power needed to unlock those last few traits is enormous. The final trait alone takes 520 million AP, which takes a lot of grinding even for players that are up to date on their artifact knowledge studies. Unsurprisingly, the forums have been filled with complaints from players about the crawling pace of their AP bars. Now, usually Blizzard would just ignore such fetching. That's what made today's changes so surprising. The devs not only responded, but through a hotfix radically altered how players will earn that last Center of Circle trait. Instead of the 520 million artifact power, players will now have to turn in 100 bottles of Arcwine, which can only be collected by repeated runnings of the quest meeting their quota in Suramar's Twilight Vineyards. In a sign the devs are getting cranky this late in the expansion, the blue post describing the change included a clip of the old I Love Lucy scene where Lucy is stomping grapes, a screen cap of the crowds around the surveying telescope from back at the founding of the Draenor garrisons, and the note, "We hope you all enjoy your new Concord Dance of the Legion Fall." Broadcasting across all Azeroth, I'm Hunts the Wind. Check out the archives at OverlyDramaticNews.com or follow me on Twitter at Hunts the Wind.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.